Welcome back to Modern Politics. I'm Warren Balog.
And I'm Emily Yukas.
It's the second week of February 2025. And today we're going to be talking about Trump's press conference and summit that he had with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu this past week. Mm-hmm. This created a lot of headlines, a lot of shock and awe from this, from the whole press conference, really, and the entire visit. And I feel like it's starting to get buried already in the news cycle. The Trump administration has taken this flood the zone approach to media relations and is just coming out with a flurry of executive orders. Their most recent thing is with South Africa. And we should quickly mention that. It's good that the plight of white South Africans is getting attention, obviously, but it's very clear that the plight of the white South Africans is being used as a political football, as a way for the incoming administration to impose sanctions on South Africa for its stance on the Palestinian genocide, for its opposition to Israel.
Yeah.
And this is made clear, above all, by the fact that Israel is mentioned in the first paragraph of the executive order announcing sanctions on South Africa. It didn't mention white people either. It didn't racialize it. It said Afrikaners, which, you know, again, that's more than we've seen in the past from previous administrations. But is there any question, Emily, that they wouldn't be imposing these sanctions if South Africa supported Israel as it had in the past?
Yeah, it's pretty obvious that's what they're doing. Now, Trump has proposed resettling the Afrikaners in the United States. And this is one of the things that are making people go, yay, Trump is helping white people. Well, the Afrikaners don't want to leave. They want to stay. And a video just came out by an Afrikaner today saying that if Trump wants to help, he should help them where they are and help them develop an autonomous community there.
Right.
And I made the point that, you know, if we're going to fund the defense of a foreign nation like we're doing to Israel, why not send the $8 billion of weapons promised to Israel and send it to the South Africans? You know, why not actually stop a genocide from happening instead of funding one?
Right. And this whole idea of moving the South Africans out, I mean, people don't realize that this issue of the white South Africans has been something that has been pushed and talked about by white nationalists and national socialists for 40, 50 years here, particularly in the 80s. And in the 90s, this was a huge issue. And I remember my dad always talking about it, William Pierce and the National Alliance always talking about it.
Yeah.
And at the time, the Republican Party, they were the ones who actually pushed the big sanctions that broke apartheid. Reagan was not as far in on the sanctions, but the whole Republican Party was.
Mm-hmm.
He wanted to have a policy of constructive engagement. In other words, don't just go full sanctions. Instead, work with them, give them incentives to dismantle apartheid. But he was still just as bad as all the rest of them in terms of freeing Nelson Mandela and putting this gang of anti-white criminals in charge of the country.
Yeah.
And then George H.W. Bush, George Bush Sr., is the one that finally delivered the death blow. So
Trump was involved in that early process in the 80s. He was hanging out with all these guys.
Yeah, Trump and Roger Stone were all in on Reaganism at the time in the 1980s. And what we see in terms of the relations of whites and blacks and everything is just a return to Reaganism. That's what Trump represents.
Yeah, and yet another point I made was, you know, the solution isn't to take whites who are facing genocide and relocate them to a country who also has a policy of white genocide, because in 20, 30, 40 years, the Afrikaners' children will be facing the same thing.
Right.
They will be facing it'll be South Africa tier here, except that, you know, we actually have laws in place to prevent people from racially forming communities, explicit racial communities like Orania. That's illegal here. So, you know, in a way, they would be a little bit worse off.
Yes. One of my big influences and mentors in this movement was Jerry Heineman, who was involved in all kinds of different organizations over the years, and he was a good friend of my dad's. And he told me one time about a plan that he had had, that he had developed. I think it was either in the 70s or the early 80s. He is no longer with us, but about a plan that he had developed, a way for South Africans to come to the United States to get refuge in the United States.
Yeah.
And they didn't want to go. This is what he told me. They did not want to go.
Right.
They were incredibly stubborn about staying, keeping the land. And again, if you know the history of the Afrikaners, of the Boers, if you know their history, these people have fought and died and bled for generations, generation after generation. To hundreds of years, these white people have been in South Africa to stay there. So really, this solution, which again, I think is just a smokescreen. I don't even think Trump and the State Department are serious about giving them refugee status.
Yeah, they might resettle them.
But the solution is, it goes to what we're going to talk about with Gaza, this sacred land that these people have fought over for generations. It is the land of their ancestors. The solution is peacefully resettle them, ethnically cleanse them, allow them to move, peacefully ethnically cleanse them from their land. And yes, this is the policy of the conservatives with whites in America for the last 60 years or 70 years. I mean, it's just constant retreat. You know, whites have lost all our major cities. We are now losing our suburbs. Mm-hmm. And the American conservative Republican solution to white land theft has been retreat, evacuate, and you have whites as refugees in the suburbs and now into the country, and then they're going to come for that too.
Right, exactly. Yeah, the whole thing, the peaceful resettlement really reminds me of what Trump was talking about 3 days ago with his generous resettlement of Gazans. So
yes,
a nice way of completing the ethnic cleansing of a place. In one instance, it's Palestinians. In the other instance, it's Afrikaners. And, you know, that also begs the question, even if he is serious, what about just regular white South Africans who are living in black ghettos, who are already a minority, who are not in Orania? They're just going to be left to die down there.
Right.
So, you know, from top to bottom, it's very fishy. But of course, you have all the Trump cheerleaders cheering this on now as a major win and forgetting all about this catastrophic press conference Trump had with Netanyahu just a couple days ago.
Yeah, we watch the whole thing, so you don't have to. And very often on this show, we like to do that because all the clips, the salacious, clickbaity stuff was going around Telegram. It was going around Twitter. But I don't know how many people actually sat and watched the whole thing.
Yeah, because the whole thing is that the clips that were going around were not actually the worst clips. It actually gets it got even worse watching the whole press conference.
Yes. Of course, the big thing that came out of this is Trump reiterated his call for the mass ethnic cleansing of Gaza. He made it clear that it wasn't just an offhand comment he made on the plane the one day. As we covered in our last show, he repeated this several times after that. And here he stated it so clearly, he actually said that all of them, all the Palestinians, need to get out of the Gaza Strip and never come back. I mean, that was the takeaway, that he doesn't want them to return. And also that he is willing to send U.S. troops to Gaza.
Yeah.
To help with this process.
That the Gaza Strip, which has been a symbol of death and destruction for so many decades and so bad for the people anywhere near it, and especially those who live there, and frankly, who's been really very unlucky. It's been very unlucky. It's been an unlucky place for a long time. Being in its presence just has not been good, and it should not go through a process of rebuilding and occupation by the same people that have really stood there and fought for it and lived there and died there and lived a miserable existence there. Instead, we should go to other countries of interest with humanitarian hearts, and there are many of them that want to do this, and build various domains that will ultimately be occupied by the 1.8 million Palestinians living in Gaza, ending the death and destruction and, frankly, bad luck. This can be paid for by neighboring countries of great wealth. It could be 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 7, 8, 12. It could be numerous sites, or it could be one large site. But the people will be able to live in comfort and peace, and we'll make sure something really spectacular is done. They're going to have peace. They're not going to be shot at and killed and destroyed like this civilization of wonderful people has had to endure The only reason the Palestinians want to go back to Gaza is they have no alternative. It's right now a demolition site. This is just a demolition site. Virtually every building is down. They're living under fallen concrete that's very dangerous and very precarious. They instead can occupy all of a beautiful area with homes and safety, and they can live out their lives in peace and harmony instead of having to go back and do it again. The U.S. will take over the Gaza Strip, and we will do a job with it, too. We'll own it and be responsible for dismantling all of the dangerous unexploded bombs and other weapons on the site, level the site and get rid of the destroyed buildings, level it out, create an economic development that will supply unlimited numbers of jobs and housing for the people of the area. Do a real job. Do something different. Just can't go back. If you go back, it's going to end up the same way it has for 100 years.
Can a normalization deal with Saudi Arabia be achieved without the acknowledgement of a Palestinian state? That question for you too, Mr. Prime Minister. And Mr. President, given what you've said about Gaza, did the U.S. send troops to help secure the security vacuum?
So Saudi Arabia is going to be very helpful, and they have been very helpful. They want peace in the Middle East. It's very simple. We know their leader and their leaders very well. They're wonderful people, and they want peace in the Middle East. As far as Gaza is concerned, we'll do what is necessary. If it's necessary, we'll do that. We're going to take over that piece. We're going to develop it, create thousands and thousands of jobs, and it'll be something that the entire Middle East can be very proud of. The whole thing is a mess, and I think that if we can resettle, and I believe we can do it in areas where the leaders currently say no. I mean, I've been saying that with Mexico, having to do with the border and all of the things, and you saw what happened, 10,000 soldiers, and they're going to do a good job. I really believe that, and I believe Canada is going to do a good job also. They said the same thing, and then they did something much different than what you were hearing. This is a very, very difficult situation, but we're going to get it solved. I don't think people should be going back to Gaza. I think that Gaza has been very unlucky for them. They've lived like hell. They lived like you're living in hell. Gaza is not a place for people to be living. And the only reason they want to go back, and I believe this strongly, is because they have no alternative. What's the alternative? Go where? There's no other alternative. If they had an alternative, they'd much rather not go back to Gaza and live in a beautiful alternative that's safe.
Now, he got so much pushback for saying that, you know, we're going to put the troops on the ground to dismantle the bombs and remove the remaining Hamas soldiers who will fight to the death. Obviously, that got so much pushback from even his base. Even the Trump cheerleaders were saying, no. That now he got a woman, his little press secretary, to say, well, we might not put boots on the ground just yet. But I mean, come on. How else are they going to clear this out? Jews aren't going to do it.
Yeah. So I want to start off by attacking some of the myths and copes, frankly, that people have been using surrounding this. One of them is the idea that this is something that surprised Netanyahu, that Trump just came up with this. It's like an off-the-cuff. Trump is just, you know, he's just running at the mouth, diarrhea mouth, and he's just sort of thinking out loud, and he came up with something here that no one was prepared for, that Netanyahu was taken aback by it, and everyone was just surprised, and it was just a spontaneous thing that he just came up with. There are several things in the press conference that point to that's a lie. The first is the fact that Trump said, and I'm going to play it, that this is something he's thought about quite a bit. He's given it a lot of thought. Listen to this.
Mr. Prime Minister, you are talking tonight about the United States taking over a sovereign territory. What authority would allow you to do that? Are you talking about a permanent occupation there, redevelopment? And Mr. Prime Minister, do you see this idea as a way to expand the boundaries of Israel and to have a longer peace, even though the Israeli people know how important that land is to you and your citizens, just as the space is inherited by the Palestinians as well?
I do see a long-term ownership position, and I see it bringing great stability to that part of the Middle East and maybe the entire Middle East. And everybody I've spoken to, this was not a decision made lightly. Everybody I've spoken to loves the idea of the United States owning that piece of land, developing and creating thousands of jobs with something that will be magnificent in a really magnificent area that nobody would know. Nobody can look because all they see is death and destruction and rubble and demolished buildings falling all over. It's just a terrible sight. I've studied it. I've studied this very closely over a lot of months, and I've seen it from every different angle, and it's a very, very dangerous place to be, and it's only going to get worse. And I think this is an idea that's gotten tremendous, and I'm talking about from the highest level of leadership, gotten tremendous praise. And if the United States can help to bring stability and peace in the Middle East, we'll do that, baby.
So he's making it clear that this is a fully formed policy that has been developed, that he's talked to people about. Now, a lot of people speculate that Jared Kushner is the one behind this, and undoubtedly that's true.
Yeah.
But in conjunction with Bibi Netanyahu, as we know, Benjamin Netanyahu and the Kushner family go back decades. Trump's relationship with Netanyahu goes back decades into the 80s.
Yes, his father and him both deeply entrenched in
the
Netanyahu Jewish mafia.
Family. Yes,
yes, yes.
Right. Right. Now, another thing is the fact that Trump was clearly reading these statements. And this is something that I haven't heard anybody talk about.
Yes.
Is that Trump was reading it. And we can point to a spot where he actually had to pause with the phrase October 7th to turn the page.
Turn the page.
Let's play that.
And I recently signed an executive order combating the vile wave of anti-Semitism that we've seen in the aftermath of the October 7th attacks.
Well, what it looks like is like you're either Jared Kushner or, frankly, Ben Gavir, because this is the Ben Gavir position. This is the most radical right-wing psycho position by these psycho terrorist Jews like Itamar Ben Gavir. Just handed him a piece of paper with the solution and told him to read it. I'm sure Trump obviously discussed this with them beforehand, but I mean, he's like reading something. It looks like he's reading something that someone else gave him.
Well, he is. And this was so the question is, who wrote this? Who wrote this? And who is involved in forming this policy? Now, I think people who have been saying that Netanyahu was caught off guard by this, you're a fool. And including some people on the left have said this. If you look at this, I mean, first of all, they came out of the room together. It's like Netanyahu handed him this before they walked out.
Yeah.
But if you watch Netanyahu throughout this, he is smirking and smiling. And there's a critical point where he talks about and he reiterates the three goals that he has for Gaza. And when asked about this, the third goal is to make it so that Gaza can never threaten Israel again.
Yeah.
So the first thing is return all the hostages. The second thing is the total destruction of Hamas, its ability to fight militarily, but also its ability to govern. And then the third war aim, he says, to make it so that Gaza can never threaten Israel again.
Yeah.
And when asked about this, because Trump's plan to ethnically cleanse, you know, he says 1.8 million people. There was 2.4 million people at the beginning. So it's a tacit admission by Trump that hundreds of thousands of people have died since Israel's assault.
How many more are, you know, wounded for life, PTSD, et cetera?
But what Netanyahu does, and I want to play this, is that when he is asked about, well, isn't this much further than what you're saying? You know, what your war aims are? We've been saying since it started that Israel's actual war aim is the complete ethnic cleansing of Gaza and its annexation by Israel and replacement with Jewish settlers.
Yes,
so,
obviously.
So he doesn't say that in his war goals. Now, if you watch this, though, what he's saying is, wink, wink, nod, nod. Well, we said we want to make Gaza so it cannot ever threaten Israel again. In other words, this is what he meant when he said that. He thinks he's being cute when he said that. This is what he meant.
Baby.
I mentioned again tonight our three goals. And the third goal is to make sure that Gaza never poses a threat to Israel again. President Trump is taking it to a much higher level. He sees a different future for that piece of land that has been the focus of so much terrorism, so many attacks against us, so many trials and so many tribulations. He has a different idea. And I think it's worth paying attention to this. We're talking about it. He's exploring it with his people, with his staff. I think it's something that could change history. And it's worthwhile really pursuing this avenue.
Yeah. The COPE is off the charts. I mean, they're like saying, oh, he doesn't look like he's smiling in one instance. If you looked at the whole press conference, he is grinning ear to ear like a Cheshire cat. And afterwards, he made tweets saying Trump is the best friend Israel ever had. Yair Netanyahu's tweeting about how he's using that biblical reference to say that Trump is like the greatest friend of the Jews. Itamar Ben-Gvir uses the phrase, I think it's the beginning of a beautiful friendship with Donald J. Trump.
Casablanca, an anti-Nazi propaganda film from Warner Brothers in the 1940s.
Well,
yes.
He appears to be referencing Casablanca. And then, of course, Ben Shapiro saying, this is amazing. This is incredible. So, like, the worst Jews in the world are jumping for joy publicly because of this news conference. Yeah. So for anyone to try and cope and say that, oh, this is actually bad for the Jews, I mean, I'm sorry, it's just retarded. You know, if anything, I think maybe Netanyahu wanted to make it seem like this was Trump's idea more than it was Netanyahu's
idea. Yes, and that's obvious throughout the... I want to play another thing where Netanyahu says, oh, this thinking out of the box, this is what we like, Donald Trump. You think outside of the box. Let's play that.
In Gaza, Israel has three goals. Destroy Hamas's military and governing capabilities, secure the release of all of our hostages, and ensure that Gaza never again poses a threat to Israel. I believe, Mr. President, that your willingness to puncture conventional thinking, thinking that has failed time and time and time again, your willingness to think outside the box with fresh ideas will help us achieve all these goals. And I've seen you do this many times. You cut to the chase. You see things others refuse to see. You say things others refuse to say. And on after the jaws drop, people scratch their heads. And they say, you know, he's right. And this is the kind of thinking that enabled us to bring the Abraham Accords. This is the kind of thinking that will reshape the Middle East and bring peace. We also see eye to eye on Iran. That's the same Iran that tried to kill us both. They tried to kill you, Mr. President. They tried through their proxies to kill me. We're both committed to rolling back Iran's aggression in the region and ensuring that Iran never develops a nuclear weapon.
So this is really funny. Obviously, Miriam Adelson, Jared Kushner, Benjamin Netanyahu are all talking about this. They all got together on this. They dictated this policy to Donald Trump, who willingly went along with it. And the whole joke here is Netanyahu's like, well, we want to make Gaza so that it can never threaten Israel again. And then Trump comes out and says, after they're in the room together and Trump gets his piece of paper, Trump comes out and says, well, you know what? I think we should just clean it out of all 1.8 million of Palestinians.
Oh, yeah.
And Netanyahu's like, ah, wow.
There's an idea.
Thank you for thinking outside. Boy, you think outside of the box,
yeah,
man.
That's... So, if, you know, Trump's base will say, well, it was Trump's decision, not Netanyahu's.
Right.
So we'll back him. This is base. Mar-a-Gaza, the American Strip. At the most charitable perspective, this is an insult to Americans. I mean, California, I think, is still burning. It's definitely still smoldering. I mean, I posted a picture of it on Twitter and said, look at this. Why don't we make a show about rebuilding this? Why don't we rebuild this? And people are like, oh, I literally thought that was Gaza for a second. You know, North Carolina is still in shambles. They're talking about maybe give them $500 million to clean up the area. You know, it's just an insult to Americans, even giving him the most benefit of the doubt.
Well, I mean, America should clean up Gaza because America funded Gaza's destruction. But Trump, throughout this press conference, he keeps using phrases like, it's been unlucky for those people.
Yes.
He says that over and over again.
Yes.
It's been an unlucky place. There's been a lot of death and destruction there. And then he says that it looks like a demolition site. He uses that phrase over and over again. And there is the war criminal, the worst war criminal of the 21st century, sitting there with this red tie and this fire crackling behind him. I mean, he looks like Satan.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
He's sitting there with this – the sound of this fire crackling is audible on the whole thing. Netanyahu there grinning while Trump talks about how Gaza's been destroyed, and there is zero just connecting the dots – who destroyed it?
Yeah.
It's sort of – it reminds me, Emily, of we covered before of when a homicidal black kills a white woman and they're like, oh, a tragedy. The
yeah.
You know, in Waukesha, the parade tragedy,
the
when
car.
a car ran into – so there he is sitting next to the mass murderer himself.
They are responsible for it. They are responsible for the total destruction and the genocide, acting like this just happened, and now they're the big saviors coming in to clean it up. No, they're not cleaning up for the Palestinians. They're cleaning it up for the Jews to have luxury Jew condos. Oh, boy. These Jews across the ocean who hate us get their luxury Jew condos on the mass graves of
the
little
Riviera.
Children.
He said it could be like the Riviera of the Middle East. And this is what Kushner said. Now, I want to point out just a couple of bad takes from the left on this and copes from the left. One minor one. I heard on Breaking Points, Ryan Grimm, who is excellent on this, and Crystal Ball were discussing it.
Yeah.
And they said that the big thing that Jared Kushner and Steve Witkoff have in common is that they are real estate developers. Mm-hmm. So they are speaking of Gaza in terms of real estate development, a demolition site. Let's hear that.
I mean, some reporting of the like behind the scenes, how this came to be has come out from CNN and the New York Times. So whatever you make of them. And effectively, they said on the one hand, he did not float this through, you know, State Department channels and whatever. But I mean, that's Trump for you. But that he and Kushner have been talking about this for quite some time. And I think Steve Witkoff mm-hmm. has been very much on the same page. I mean, both of these guys are developers, right? They're very used to the way their brain works. They see a beautiful coastline and they see dollar signs. And also as developers, they're also quite comfortable with displacing a number mm-hmm. of people in order to achieve those, you know, those building goals that they may have. So, you know, it seems to me that while, yeah, he didn't go through the proper channels, this is something that has been percolating in his mind for at least some time. And we had Kushner come out and say that thing about, oh, beautiful waterfront property, blah, blah, blah.
Now, what's funny is, and this is the problem with the left in general, they keep talking about Zionists and Zionism, and here Steve Witkoff and Jared Kushner are real estate developers. That's what they have in common in their background.
So it's Trump.
It's impossible to acknowledge on the left that Jared Kushner and Steve Witkoff are Jewish. This word.
I know.
Jew. J-E-W, cannot say it. So that doesn't have something to do with this? Now, let's listen to what Netanyahu says. Does he say we are Zionists? This is the Zionist state? No. Let's hear what he says.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'm honored that you invited me to be the first foreign leader to visit the White House in your second term. This is a testament to your friendship and support for the Jewish state and the Jewish people.
So he's calling it the Jewish state of Israel and the Jewish people.
Yeah.
Netanyahu is very clear.
Yeah, and then people like Crystal Ball and stuff that still won't use the word Jewish.
They still won't use it.
I mean, if Netanyahu can say it, why not? Why can't you?
Right. I mean, the best thing with Netanyahu is to take him at his word. I mean, listen to what these Jews are saying, listen to what they believe and what their ideology is, and simply take them at their word. Now, another sort of cope here, something that people have been saying in response to this, is that oh, well, Trump's not serious. This is another one of his things like take over Canada, take over Greenland. Huh. This is just Trump. Trump does this. He says these wild, crazy things.
Oh, well, you know what? I'll maybe consider that if he had Trudeau in the White House and did this exact same thing with Trudeau about annexing Canada, maybe I would believe him a little more.
He says a lot of wild and crazy things. And what people have been saying is, well, actually, this is a negotiating tactic. What Trump is, this is his opening gambit. He's taking an extreme position as a negotiating tactic, and he doesn't really mean it. He's not really serious. And I've seen so many different people say this.
Well, I'm just, how?
Here is Scott Ritter, for instance, talking about this. And he makes an interesting comment. He says, as an analyst, I have to take this as that Trump is not serious, that there's something else going on, because if he is serious, then we are actually being governed by madmen.
But is Donald Trump's solution a solution? Of course not. On the face of it, not. But who is Donald Trump? Again, Ray's the one who taught me to think like this, to dig a little bit deeper. Donald Trump's not a diplomat. He's not a statesman. He's a New York State real estate businessman. And when you sit down with a real estate businessman in New York to talk business, somebody puts an offer on the table. The people that say no are kicked out of the room. You're not part of the game anymore. He's looking for a counter offer. And I think that's what, because this is so ridiculous, so illegal, so impossible. It's literally impossible for him to do what he says he's doing. He can't do it. He's put an offer out there, and he's challenging the people not just to say no, but to say, hey, no, this is so crazy. We've got to come up with something. Because there has been no solution to Gaza. This is my guess. I'm just guessing. I'm spitballing. Because it's the only thing that allows me to believe that there's sanity in the White House. Because if I'm wrong on this, and Donald Trump actually believes he can do this, then we are literally being governed by a madman, by an insane man who is dangerous, not for, just for the world, but for the American people. And it's something that we have to reflect on.
But I actually agree with an analyst who appeared on Al Jazeera named Peter Osborne. He's a journalist, and he wrote a book called The Triumph of the Political Class, The Rise of Political Lying, Why the West is Wrong About Nuclear Iran. And he also wrote a book about how Donald Trump thinks. And listen to what he says. He actually says that we need to take this very seriously.
Given just how incredibly unrealistic this plan of forcibly displacing 2.3 million Palestinians out of Gaza is, Egypt and Jordan is not going to take them. Given how unrealistic it is, what is the political strategy then behind suggesting such a plan?
Well, I'm not as sanguine as you are about it being unrealistic. The United States is, for all of its current confusion, is the most powerful nation in the globe with massive military and financial resources. I completely reject your suggestion that it's unrealistic. And I also note, this is crucial, by the way, the enormous signal it sent to the far right in Israel to carry on the ethnic cleansing of the West Bank, the lawlessness which is already going on. We saw Bezalel Smotrich, the administrator of the West Bank, greeting with acclaim the Trump announcements. And so this is monumentally consequential in the real world. I do accept part of the analysis, which is that Mr. Trump doesn't really understand how the world works. He's a cunning political maneuverer, but I think it's more sensible and more urgent to look at the real world consequences of what he's doing, and they are terrible.
Now, the question is Israel taking it seriously? And yes, absolutely. The Israeli defense minister has ordered, since this press conference, has ordered the military to prepare for, quote, departure, unquote, of Palestinians from Gaza.
And we just are in the process of sending them $8 billion worth of weapons. So, you know, if Trump isn't taking it seriously, then he's like a dupe or retarded or just being used, because this plan is going through.
Yeah, I mean, this is just today that we're recording. State Department announces $7 billion arms sale to Israel after Congress blocked the initial deal. They're actually, the State Department, and this is Marco Rubio's State Department, is bypassing Congress. And of course, Israel isn't going to pay for any of this. We forgive we loan them the money and then we forgive the loans,
yes.
or we just give them the money and then they buy the weapons with the money. So it's the same as us giving the weapons.
Yeah, there was this arms sale, this $1 billion arms sale. And I was like, oh, look, you know, we freed up all this U.S. aid money from DOGE, from all these leftist causes, which, you know, that's not really like a big, you know, something like new because they've been defunding the left and putting everything into the right for quite some time now. But even still, you know, we freed this all up. But now we're giving $1 billion to Israel. We freed up $1 billion and we're sending $1 billion to Israel in this arms sale. And people are like, it's an arms sale. We're actually getting Jews money out of this. And no, sale means literally that we just give it to them.
Yes.
Literally means
yes.
We just give it to them. So, you know, when you're seeing people that are supposedly Jew-wise on our side, not even realizing that that's what a sale to Israel looks like.
Yes.
You know.
Yeah. I agree with this analyst that this needs to be taken extremely seriously, especially since this is the war objective of the Israeli state. You know, it's worth noting, Emily, that Gaza, in ancient times, the Jews never conquered Gaza. Gaza was held by the Philistines, and the Philistines is actually the word that's where the word Palestine comes from. And the Romans, when they conquered the area, they called it Palestina. We know it's so interesting because the Israelis are engaged right now in trying to aggressively get the State Department and Washington to refer to these areas, the West Bank and Gaza, by other names, by Israeli names. They're biblical names, Hebrew names. But actually, the name Palestine and Palestinian comes from Europeans who came there. I mean, Europeans have been in that area fighting Jews for thousands of years. The Greeks were there first.
Mm-hmm.
Then the Romans were there. Then the Crusaders in the First Crusade, and all of them fought Jews there. So this is the thing that people don't understand. People who want to say that this is not our fight, that this is something that concerns Middle Easterners, or that want to say that people like Stephen Miller are pro-white Jews or they're base Jews or this and that.
Yeah.
The Jews forget and forgive nothing, and they view European civilization, Hellenistic culture, the Greeks, the Romans, the entire tradition of Western Europe and of all of Europe, they view us as the enemy. They view us as the big enemy. We are the big enemy. The white race is the big enemy.
Yeah, and you know they're still saying this openly. Their host population is always the enemy. Aaron Wexler in The Battle Cry of Hanukkah is talking about how, you know, the host country that we're in, we need to not assimilate, and we need to fight them.
Yes.
She just put that out in her article, as we discussed in the last episode.
Yeah, they view us as the big bad, the big enemy, the final boss is the white European peoples. And that's why everything that's being done with Trump, including, you know, canceling woke and DEI while enshrining and shoring up the civil rights legislation and Martin Luther King Day and all this, everything that the Trump administration is doing is a way of getting white consent to white replacement.
Right.
In the United States.
But without actually helping white people. They're giving the illusion of helping white people, like resettling the Afrikaners. But if you want to help white people, you know, make an executive order protecting the white majority in the United States, you can just do things, right? Make an executive order saying the white population shall not go below like 60%. I'll take 60%. Why not? He won't do that.
He won't even say the word white.
Yeah.
He won't even say the word white. He won't, again, while all this talk about the Jewish people, the left is afraid to say these are Jews, Witkoff and Kushner and all the rest of them. They are not afraid to say it, but they are afraid to say white. So another thing that I haven't seen anybody talk about, if you watch this full press conference, there's this really bizarre dynamic where it's a summit and a meeting of two leaders, and you have these two leaders of two different nations, and they have, you know, ostensibly they have a partnership. They have an alliance, right?
Supposedly, yeah.
And here's the leader of the one country, and here's the leader of the other country, and they got their flags behind them. Trump, in his remarks, goes through and lists all the things that he has done for Israel.
Yes.
Then Benjamin Netanyahu, when it's his turn to talk, he goes through and recites all the things that Trump has done for Israel.
Yeah, so what are we getting out of this partnership? It's like glaringly obvious. Oh, all the great things that Trump is, and America has done for Israel. Okay, surely this partnership, we should be getting something in return. What are we getting in return? Is there one thing that they can even, you know, do a show thing of what we're getting in return? No, nothing.
I recognized Israel's capital, opened the American embassy in Jerusalem, and got it built, by the way. Built it too, just not only designated it, but got it built at a price that nobody's seen for 40 years. We got it built. It's beautiful. All Jerusalem stone, right from nearby, and it's something that's very special. And recognized Israeli sovereignty over the Golan Heights, something that they talked about for 70 years, and they weren't able to get it, and I got it. And with the historic Abraham Accord, something that was really an achievement that was, I think, going to become more and more important because we achieved the most significant Middle East peace agreements in half a century, but the Abraham Accords in particular, and I really believe that many countries will soon be joining.
In your first term, you recognized Jerusalem as Israel's capital. You moved the American embassy there. You recognized Israel's sovereignty over the Golan Heights. You withdrew from the disastrous Iran nuclear deal. I remember we spoke about it. You said, this is the worst deal I've ever seen. I'm elected. I'm walking out of it. That's exactly what you did. And I think it speaks loudly for just common sense, just looking at things and seeing them as they are. And, of course, you also brokered the groundbreaking Abraham Accords in which Israel made peace with four Arab states. We did this in 4 months. Nothing happened for a quarter of a century, but in 4 months, we were able, working together under your leadership, to have four historic peace accords. And now in the first days of your second term, you picked up right where you left off. Your leadership to help bring our hostages home, among them American citizens. You freed up munitions that have been withheld from Israel. They had been withheld from Israel in the midst of a seven-front war for our existence. And you just freed it. You ended unjust sanctions against law-abiding Israeli citizens. You boldly confronted the scourge of anti-Semitism. You stopped funding, as you just said, international organizations like UNRWA that support and fund terrorists. And today, you renewed the maximum pressure campaign against Iran. Ladies and gentlemen, all this in just 2 weeks. Can we imagine where we'll be in 4 years?
Now, after this, Netanyahu did say that Israel is beating America's enemies. America's enemies.
Oh, yes.
So that's the one.
Okay.
I mean, even Netanyahu is not so shameless and brazen that he can just brag about the things America is doing for Israel without giving a token something. But what he's saying is Nasrallah and Hezbollah, Hamas and Sinwar and Haniyeh, these were America's enemies.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So that's the one thing that he says. But
No one's falling for that anymore. Maybe back in like saying Saddam and Osama bin Laden were enemies of America after 9/11 could work. I don't think it's working anymore.
Yeah, it's just a really strange dynamic. And
you said it was like a FinDom relationship.
Yeah, it's a FinDom relationship between Israel and America where Trump just recites all the things he's doing for Israel, and then Israel says all the things that Trump is doing for Israel.
Trump just gives Israel unlimited money like a teenager who has daddy's credit card.
Yeah, it's just it's insane. And the occupation of our government by Zionists could not be more obvious. And again, it's just so brazen, Emily, the fact that they couldn't do this thing with South Africa.
Unless
they want to sanction South Africa. Now, they need an excuse to punish South Africa for what South Africa has been saying about Israel. So
yeah.
Here's the perfect excuse. I'm sure J.D. Vance and, you know, and Peter Thiel and these guys are, this is real smart.
Let's market it as a pro-white policy.
It's a pro-white policy.
And everybody's like the freaking MAGA base is just clapping their hands. And
but the brazenness of this, that even in this thing, they still have to include Israel and Hamas in the first paragraph of the executive order. It just shows they are not only is this a totally occupied government by Zionists, but even when they try to do these little sleight of hand things to make you, to confuse you or throw you off balance or, you know, punish South Africa for Israel, but use a smokescreen, they do such a bad job of hiding it.
Yeah, they're not subtle, but that's because it actually works. I mean, if you go on Twitter, which is literally an operation to be a pro-Trump and pro-Elon cheerleading platform. I mean, it's not like – this isn't like a schizo theory here. I mean, it's quite obvious what it is. I mean, the algorithm just pushes the pro-Trump stuff. But it works. Like, they can be that brazen, and you will have, like, even, like, white nationalists supposedly – clapping for it and saying, oh my gosh, they really care about white people, even 3 days after this catastrophic press conference that they're just forgetting about.
Yeah. Now, a couple of other things that were in it. At one point, Netanyahu repeated the lies of October 7th. And it's really crazy because these have been debunked. There were no mass rapes. There's been no proof that there was any rapes on October 7th.
There were rapes by Israelis.
Oh, massive rapes. You know, I mean,
they literally fought to rape their prisoners, and like 60% of people thought it was good to rape their own
prisoners. They rioted to release the prison rapist IDF.
Pro-rape demonstrations by Jews.
Yes. But then he says this line about the burning the babies.
Oh, yeah.
They beheaded men. They raped women. They burnt babies alive, and they took 251 people hostage to the dungeons of Gaza. And after this worst attack on Jews since the Holocaust, Iran and its henchmen in the Middle East...
Burning babies. He always has to do that when he talks about
burning... Burnt the babies.
They burnt the baby. No, you guys burnt the babies.
Yeah, but there were two infants killed on October 7th, and... both of them, it seems, were killed by Israeli fire, which, by the way, the Israeli government just acknowledged that the Hannibal Directive was in effect.
Oh, they did
on October 7th.
Oh, my God.
Or an Israeli official acknowledged it, and that they killed a lot of their own people. So of the two infants that were killed on October 7th, it looks like both of them were killed by Israeli fire. Now, again, thousands upon thousands of Palestinian children and infants have been killed.
And maimed, tens of thousands.
Right. And Netanyahu still repeats this lie. And then Trump comes on and talks about the Holocaust and Holocaust denial. Netanyahu mentions it first, and then Trump says October 7th deniers are like Holocaust deniers. Let's play that.
We can't forget it. I'll never forget it. And you can't forget it. And some people want to put it out of their memory, but we're not going to ever let that happen. It was a horrible day, October 7th. That was a horrible period of time. And a lot of people like to pretend it didn't happen. It happened. It's a big group of people that like to pretend it didn't happen, like the Holocaust didn't happen. Same mindset.
This is what I'm saying. These clips weren't even going around.
No.
And these clips that were going around weren't even the worst of this shit. And obviously only 2% of people are going to tune into the whole press conference.
Right.
It is a freaking abomination. It's a slap in the face to everybody. But you know what? I'm glad it happened because it shreds any doubt that Trump literally exists to serve Jews and Jewish interests.
Yeah.
I'm glad it was, I actually thought he was going to be a little subtle here. You know, he's putting on such a big show about everything. He's doing a great job with the PR stuff in the first couple weeks. Everyone's saying, we're getting what we voted for, even though mass deportations are not happening. I think we cracked like 1K a couple days, but they're not happening, especially at the rate that will actually do a dent in reversing white genocide in this country. But his PR stuff has, he does a good PR game. He puts on a good show. I thought maybe he would give the illusion that you know, we have to work with Israel, obviously, but, you know, we're not just going to give them like literally everything they want and more and do the Ben-Gavir freaking option. No, there was no subtlety here. And I'm glad.
Trump learned from the best. We just watched the Roy Cohn movie, The Apprentice. And It's funny because I was thinking about with all these gestures and executive orders and everything. I mean, the flurry of things we talked about at some on War Strike as far as the fact that a lot of the people that are being arrested by ICE are then being released. They're saying that they're releasing them. News articles have been pointing out that it's mainly for show, the arrests that they've been doing, and they've been letting them go on the back end. And then also this huge scandal where all these ICE press releases about people being arrested that go back, some of them to 2008, mm-hmm. have been updated with last updated thousands of articles of news items of ICE raids have been updated as of January 2025 and are now appearing in the Google search results.
That is a scandal.
Yeah, so they're gaining.
No one's talking. I don't see anyone talking about that.
No, this is actually Stryker and I didn't know about it. This was some of our War Strike viewers who sent this to us while we were on the show. But this shows how it's all a big PR thing. But
it's all for show. And even if it was even if they actually were deporting these people, it doesn't. We need 20,000 minimum per day. I did the math to get to 30 million, which is the lower rung of the total amount of illegals in this country. If we're going to remove 30 million people, 60% of Americans are in favor of deporting all illegal immigrants. So this isn't even a radical position here. Right. These are normies that want this.
Including some Democrats.
Yes.
Democrats and independents. Huge numbers of Democrats and independents.
Exactly. So just to get to the bottom rung of the estimated illegals, 30 million, you would have to deport 20,000 people per day.
Yes.
And we are barely cracking 1,000 on a good day.
Yeah.
And a lot of those people are being released. So it's a total joke. It's a total insult to all Americans. And anyone who is encouraging the cheerleading of this, you're bullying people into being complicit into supporting a person who is not delivering on the bare minimum of promises and is a literal servant to Jews and Jewish interests over the American people.
And the reason I bring up the Apprentice film is there's a really funny scene in it, and I'll play the clip, where Roy Cohn at the end, Trump has learned all the tricks from this horrible gay Jew Republican mafia connected fixer.
Mm-hmm.
And Trump is like, you know, he's absorbed all the lessons. And then he gives a gift to Roy Cohn of these cufflinks that are supposed to be very high value. And then Ivana has to tell him they're fake.
Yeah.
Let's play this.
Yeah, your little birthday gift.
For me?
It's your birthday.
Oh, well, you didn't have to do that, Donald.
Come on. 59, but who's counting? Huh?
Tiffany diamonds and look what it says. Trump.
What do you think?
That's terrific.
Yeah, they're going to look good.
Oh, look at this. Did you see this? Donald got me diamond cufflinks for my birthday. Beautiful, right?
My darling, this is cheap pewter. The stone is zirconia. They're fake.
Now, I actually enjoyed this movie a lot. This was actually one of the few modern movies that was actually immersive. It really just exposed how much, even when he was a young man, he is beholden to Jews.
Yes. And how shameless he is. I mean, how with Trump, it's always the Trump stake, the Trump scam. He's a scammer. And he scams you, and he's got a good – and that's the funny thing in the end there where he's even trying to scam Roy Cohn with these fake cufflinks.
Yeah, yeah.
I want to direct our audience again to this excellent Substack article Trump timeline of an Israeli asset. It's on the Pekel's Expedition Substack. This piece really documents all the links and ties between the Trump family and the Jews and the Russian Jewish mafia. And, you know, that's something with Roy Cohn specifically that people need to understand, is that it's possible for someone to be a right-wing so-called Jew.
Yes.
Roy Cohn was, you know, he was a radical American patriot.
Mm-hmm.
He actually was instrumental in getting the Rosenbergs the death penalty.
Yeah.
But
I mean, he's still just as anti-white as any of them. And he wants to serve Jewish interests just as much as any of them. Now, this article is excellent. I just read that, and I have to say, even like someone like me who's been studying Trump and his Jewish relations for, what, 8-9 years now, there's stuff in here that shocked me. I mean, just the thorough Jewishness of Trump.
Yeah.
And like literal Jewish supremacist in every sense of the word. His connections to Epstein, to Mossad, not just vague, not just they had a picture together. He literally ran around with Jeffrey Epstein like in the 90s in public. I mean, the funny thing is people say, oh, well, Trump, they must have Trump like, you know, screwing an underage girl on videotape. I'm sure they have that. But I don't think that's the reason why Trump is doing this.
No,
he genuinely wants to do this.
Yes, he and his father all the way back have been aggressively pro-Jewish to the point now where he has Jewish grandchildren. I would say that even compared to a Hillary Clinton, a Bill Clinton or a Joe Biden, Trump has gone further. And they say this about him. They all say this about him. And Netanyahu said it at the press conference.
I've said this before, I'll say it again. You are the greatest friend Israel has ever had in the White House.
The other thing that emerges from this is that war with Iran is still very much on the table. And,
oh, yeah.
And Trump put out a Truth Social saying he doesn't want war with Iran. And in the press conference, he says how much he loves the Iranians, but they can't have a nuclear weapon, and this is what he wants.
Go ahead, baby. Go ahead.
I think the president just said something that I think is the pivot of everything that we're talking about. He said Iran cannot have a nuclear weapon. And we fully agree with that. If this goal can be achieved by a maximum pressure campaign, so be it. But I think the most important thing is to focus on the goal, which the president just did, and I fully agree with him.
Well, I said it, and he said it very well. It's a campaign of pressure to see if we can get something done. He doesn't want to do what some people think will automatically happen because they're very difficult people to deal with, as you know. But if we could solve this problem without warfare, without all of the things that you've been witnessing over the last number of years, it would be, I think it would be a tremendous thing.
Yeah. If at the end of the press conference, there was some really creepy stuff that he said.
Well, there's a veiled threat here that he's making. And I really feel like I think that this is still in very much in the works. The Ayatollah Khomeini has said that he is not going to negotiate with the United States, and rightly so. I mean, that's the only position to take. You know, this crazy call by Trump for this mass ethnic cleansing has actually unified the Middle East. It's unified the world against the position of the United States. But this is very much what Trump did in his first term. If you remember what Trump did in his first term, he gave the Israelis everything, even more than they were asking for. And this is what sort of set up October 7th and this massive backlash.
Yes. Let's go over that, because I think a lot of these new Trump supporters probably like got in during the Biden regime. I don't think a lot of these people that are cheerleading him on now were around for the first term, because the level of just like shock and like, oh, my God, I didn't see this coming, like makes me think that these people just started supporting him like during the absolute woke pitfall of the Biden era.
Yeah.
And that they have absolutely no idea of the stuff he did for Israel in the first term. That literally led to the desperation of the Palestinians to launch the October 7th raid.
Yes, exactly. And so if you just go by, I mean, Ben Shapiro has said the best indication for what Trump's second term is going to be like is his first term. And if you just go by his first term, what we're going to get, I mean, they've brought back the so-called maximum pressure campaign against Iran. What we're going to get is more of what we got during the first term, and it's going to be ramping up. Now, I want to just give honorable mention, dishonorable mention, to a couple of real scumbags out there. One of them, Marco Rubio, who's jumping on this. I mean, Marco Rubio, again, is a super, super neocon war hawk and is enthusiastically backing this plan.
And he's not very good at being subtle either. In fact, he's just really being very ham-fisted trying to sell this to people.
John Fetterman is probably the worst scumbag in the Democratic Party. And he came out and enthusiastically got on board with the ethnic cleansing plan for Gaza. And Fetterman, it's interesting because he is sort of being touted by some people as like the new direction that the anti-woke Democratic Party, that it needs to go.
Yeah.
You know, Fetterman did not vote for Tulsi or for RFK Jr. in the Senate confirmation, but he did vote for all of Trump's super neocon picks like Rubio and all the rest of them. Pam Bondi was just confirmed this week as attorney general, and something that Stryker found that's very significant, and I want to mention it again here, is that Pam Bondi is now in Merrick Garland's position. She's the attorney general of the United States, same position as Janet Reno and all the rest of them. This is the woman who was on record saying that the FBI should go after all Hamas people who express support for Hamas, including American citizens, not just foreign students. So this whole Hamas support network of Project Esther, right?
Yes.
But Pam Bondi is horrible on gun control and has been a big supporter of red flag laws and seizing people's guns, law-abiding citizens.
I wonder who will be whose guns will be seized under the red flag laws with this new Anti-Semitism Awareness Act.
And there's no there was no pushback by the Republicans that you have this gun grabber as the attorney general, but she supports Israel. Now, you also have a new executive order from Trump saying that the Justice Department needs to prioritize cases of anti-Semitism. In other words, drop all the cases of discrimination against other people and prioritize cases of anti-Semitism.
Yeah, DEI is gone, except when it comes to Jews. And as we pointed out, DEI is not actually gone. People on our side and the left actually think that Trump ended civil rights laws.
Yeah.
Which, you know, this goes to show just how bad this blind Trump cheerleading has gotten.
Yeah.
No, he ended affirmative action, or one section, small section of affirmative action, to stop racial discrimination.
Well, and you could say, well, that stops racial discrimination against whites. But even the people that have been celebrating this are saying, well, it's affirmative action affects high IQ Asians and others. Lee Fang wrote a whole Substack about this, and a lot of the people defending it, the Jews defending it, this is what they're saying. I mean,
I just want to, you know, point out that the civil rights laws of the 60s are fundamentally anti-white laws. They're anti-white laws disguised as anti-discrimination laws that, you know, force Section 8 housing into your neighborhoods, that force your kids to go to school with little violent black kids. You can get sued if you don't meet a quota of black tenants. So these anti-white laws, they're like, oh, well, we're just going back to equal rights. Well, no, the civil rights laws are fundamentally anti-white.
The Civil Rights Act and the Fair Housing Act, and this goes all the way back even to Lincoln, the civil rights acts that have been passed that the Republican Party was the largest champion of from the beginning, from the 1860s, is what has destroyed white America. And this pulling back And you know, the affirmative action thing in federal contractor hiring, it's just rescinding LBJ's one executive order on that. It's shoring up the civil rights laws, and we showed it on this show. That's why the executive order begins. Again, read the executive orders. It starts out by affirming and enshrining the civil rights legislation.
Yeah, well, people don't want to read it. They don't want to read the actual text.
And I think on affirmative action specifically, because affirmative action is something that the Republican Party widely condemned David Duke in the 1980s. He was the first major national figure who spoke up against affirmative action all the way back then. That's when we had an 80-85% white majority. What's going on, clearly, because this executive order just follows up on the Supreme Court ruling saying that they can't do affirmative action in college admissions. What we have happening here, and I wrote this on Telegram, is that whites have fallen to such a minority, and it used to be that the only major non-white group in America were blacks, were American blacks, the descendants of the slaves. That was true even in the 80s.
Yeah.
Now, the percentage of blacks, of American-born blacks, I should say, because we've had millions of Africans come in as well, the percentage of American-born blacks relative to the total population has been far exceeded by so-called Asians, meaning Indians, South Indians, and South Asians.
Yeah.
And hordes of mestizos from Central and South America, who are a much larger group. So affirmative action was used as a wedge to weaken and destroy and break up the political and economic power of white America. It has served its purpose. Right now, all affirmative action would do is basically force blacks into, you know, incompetent, dysfunctional black people into workspaces that are increasingly dominated by Indians in white-collar jobs or mestizos in blue-collar jobs.
Yeah.
So they don't need that. They've got the white replacement by other means now.
Yes.
They don't need affirmative action anymore.
No.
So this is the thing. Every one of these little actions is a token thing. The ones that are any good, like birthright citizenship, are going to be struck down in the courts. But what we are getting is a naked, open, total Zionist coup takeover of the government.
Yes.
To where Trump's policy, as you pointed out, is to the right of Netanyahu's spoken policy. Again, I think Netanyahu, absolutely, this is his plan. But it's to the – what Trump's policy is actually all the way out there in the Itamar Ben-Gavir Jewish power territory. And this is why even Lindsey Graham, who is probably the best friend that the Jewish people have in Congress, his reaction to this was, I don't know if my constituents are going to go for that. Boots on the ground in Gaza.
No, it's an open Zionist coup disguised with a very thin veil as a like white supremacist takeover that both the left and the Trump cheerleaders on the right are falling for.
Yeah. And you know, that we should point out also, Israel is now openly saying what we've all been saying for actually, you know, over a year now, that the final thing is going to be deport them to Europe. And Israel is saying it. They've said it over and over and over again. Ireland.
Spain.
Spain. Norway. And then now Canada, they're saying. And that will be the goal if Egypt and Jordan cannot be strong-armed into taking them. The goal is going to be eventually get them into Europe. And I'll tell you how this is going to go down, Emily. This is what I think. This is my prediction. With war with Iran, if you listen very carefully, it's being set up. If they don't stop trying to go after a nuclear weapon, then we're going to invade. Now, again, this is the same thing we heard with Saddam Hussein, the same rhetoric. If you don't get rid of your weapons of mass destruction, we're coming for you. They said the same thing to Muammar Gaddafi and Libya.
Yep.
And when Libya showed that they had no weapons of mass destruction, when they had no nuclear weapons, that's when they went in.
They still went in.
To destroy Libya.
That's the funny thing is like they're just waiting. They're saying, okay, once you prove that you actually don't have anything to fight back, then we will invade you.
Yeah. So again, we just have to go by the record here. As Ben Shapiro said, the best indication of how Trump's going to govern is how he governed before. The assassination of Soleimani was a great example. This whole thing of, uh-oh, you better not get nukes. We better not think you're getting nukes. All they have to do is say, well, we think they're getting nukes. And then they can justify any kind of strike. And that's what they're setting it up for. Now, with the Palestinians, here's what I think is going to happen. I think Israel is going to start with a mass deportation, and it's going to create
a real mass deportation.
Yes, they're going to grab these people.
We're going to see that it's possible. At least it'll show that it is possible to mass deport like tens of thousands of people every day.
Yeah, and they're going to hundreds of thousands. And they're going to, when this forced expulsion is underway, no one's going to be able to stop them because the U.S. is not going to stop them and no one's going to stop the U.S. And what will happen is the international outcry will grow. Oh, these poor suffering people. And then the pressure will grow on the Europeans.
Yep.
Are you hypocrites that won't help these poor people? This is what Israel said. They have said that any European country that doesn't take Palestinians will be exposed as hypocrites.
I mean, come on. Like the absolute insane layers of hypocrisy for Israel to say that. That caused these people to be in their position in the first place.
Right. So, and then Trump also, he was asked about annexing the West Bank in this same press conference. And he said, we're going to make a decision on that in the next 4 weeks. We know that's what Miriam Adelson wanted him to do.
Yeah. Well, Trump has, you know, enabled the settling, illegal settlers to, you know, keep expanding during his first term. And now it appears he wants to turn the West Bank into New Gaza. That's going to be New Gaza now.
This is a Zionist occupied government. Zionist Jews that hate white people, hate the white race, and have not forgiven us even for the Romans and the Greeks going in to Palestina.
Yes, and Donald Trump is 100% complicit. He's 100% knows what's going on.
He's owned by
them.
This
is what he wants.
Like Van Helsing says in Bram Stoker's Dracula, he is a willing recruit, the devil's concubine. That is what Donald Trump is.
He's BB's concubine.
And he has been his entire career, his entire career. So we have to push back on this and oppose this and keep beating the drum, and we cannot let people cope. Even the left, and say, oh, this is just the opening gambit in a negotiation tactic. He doesn't really mean this. He's this, he's that. Trump says this, he says that. These are real estate developers. Or the people saying, well, he has to make a deal with these people.
I mean, when the left, who has made Trump out to be literal like Satan for, you know, the wrong reasons, granted, but if even the left is doing copes about this, you know, what hope is there for anyone?
And the other thing that was in that wonderful Substack piece, that essay, and I'll put the headline up, you know, the Russian collusion was never proven. But Israeli collusion was proven. There is no question about this.
Yeah, it's open.
That the Israeli government intervened in the election to get Trump elected, and they did it again in 2024. So, again, we have to fight this. We have to fight the Zionist Jewish occupation of our country if we are white men and white women worthy of the name.